Well, I wonder if you've heard the one about the prostitute, the preacher, and the Pharisee. No, it's not a joke. It's the story that we've just read. I'm not going to tell you a rip-roaringly funny joke. Indeed, in fact, as you read through this story, the punchline makes it clear that it's definitely not a joke. In fact, for some, the punchline makes their blood boil. The preacher, Jesus, said to the prostitute in line 48, you see it there? Your sins are forgiven. Now, just think how shocking this really is. This woman who had done so much damage to many families was forgiven by Jesus. Isn't Jesus pro-family? What is going on here? One of the most disturbing experiences of my life was to visit a family just after the husband had admitted to an adulterous affair. I was called in as the vicar of the local church. I knew the family well. And as I walked into the house, the pain of the wife and the daughter was tangible. They were distraught with a combination of disgust and disappointment as they looked at their husband and father. Well, look, marriages had broken up after men had been lured to this woman's bedroom. Yet Jesus forgave her. The story begins quite normally. Jesus out to dinner with a Pharisee who is a religious leader. Nothing spectacular about that, until into this dinner party crashes this most unwelcome guest. You see it there again in line 37, when a woman who'd lived a sinful life in that town learned that Jesus was eating at the Pharisee's house, she bought an alabaster jar of perfume, and she, as she stood behind him at his feet weeping, she began to wet his feet with her tears. See, after dark, you'd find her standing by the curb, dressed to kill. Well, dressed to seduce, actually. And for us to be shocked as we should be, by this whole incident, we've got to lose the image of the happy hooker. You know, the picture that's portrayed by Hollywood movies, movies like this one, Pretty Woman. Do you remember seeing that some years ago? In Hollywood films, the prostitute is attractive and warm-hearted and big-bosomed. And if I can say that in a church hall, well, I'm too bad, I just have. She's in Hollywood, she's sympathetic. She's a stable character. Let's lose that image as we read this story. As we read Luke chapter 7, picture a woman with caked makeup, cheap jewellery, an unstable personality. And if you can bear the detail at lunchtime, syphilitic sores, her arms scarred from the constant use of banned substances, and the haunting fear of AIDS written all over her face. A hardened, cynical, toughened character. Life had knocked her back again and again and again. And respectable men, those who worked in the city, lived in Surrey, members of their golf club. Respectable men had used her and abused her again and again and again. Now, you see, if we can get that picture in our mind, we may begin to feel the shock, the embarrassment, the complete outrage of this scene. When this woman walked in, this was no longer an ordinary dinner party. And it goes from bad to worse. Look at line 38 again. She stood behind Jesus, at his feet, weeping. She began to wet his feet with her tears. Then she wiped them with her hair, kissed them, and poured perfume on them. And Jesus let her do all that. Can you imagine the reaction in the room? The embarrassed silence, the tut-tutting from the other guests. Can you imagine how the Pharisee felt? His dinner party ruined. Have you ever ruined a dinner party? Now, I nearly did a few years ago. I'd be quite interested to hear your stories afterwards. As we took our places at the table, I really don't remember how the subject came up, but as we sat down, I was happily telling our host how much I didn't like fish. Yeah, you're ahead of me already, aren't you? We sat down and I carried on yapping on and totally oblivious of the hard stare that my wife was giving me across the table. When that didn't work, she tried to change the subject, but I still continued to tell our hosts of my dislike of almost all fish. I only stopped speaking when Caroline, really, this is true, literally kicked me under the table. I looked at her, she looked at me, and then she looked at the plate that was in front of me. The plate of smoked salmon. Well, we were with friends, and after a bit of embarrassment, the evening was delightful. But you couldn't say that about this dinner party. Allowing a prostitute to wash your feet in the middle of your coq au vin? Not done, is it? Well, this was enough to make anyone choke on their prawn cocktail, wasn't it? Would they like fish or not? And the whole thing is just too much for some. See, a few years ago, I was talking to a group of people about Jesus and about the fact that when he died on the cross, he died so that we could all be forgiven no matter what we've done. And I was getting really excited about telling these people about this, and I was quite excited that they were understanding what I was saying. And as I was speaking to them and getting excited about it, you know, I said to them, isn't that great news? And one of them said to me, no, it's not great news at all. You mean that anyone can be forgiven? I said, yeah, it's great, isn't it? No, it's not at all. Are you saying to me that the murderer and the terrorist and the prostitute can be forgiven? That I cannot accept. But you see, that's exactly what happened here. This woman was accepted by Jesus, forgiven by him in line 48. It makes some people very angry. But here is wonderful good news for others. It's good news for people who think this, who think, I'm too bad to be forgiven. I've done terrible things. Well, look, if that's how you think, if this woman can be forgiven, for all I know, someone here may well have sold their body for sex in the past. There will be people here who've had sexual encounters of which they're terribly ashamed. Those who've used a prostitute. Those ensnared by pornography on the net, perhaps. People caught up in an adulterous affair. Those encounters will have left their mark. Sexual sin does that, you see. The unwanted pregnancy, the abortion, the guilt, or just the emptiness of having made something so special become so cheap. And even if you've done none of those things, there are the fantasies, the imagined sex, the rape. Listen what it is. Listen, whatever you have done, whether it's sexual or not, come to Jesus and you'll discover that nothing's too bad to be forgiven. And forgiveness is such a wonderful thing to know. In this film, Pretty Woman, there is a striking example of what can happen if we don't really realise how we can be forgiven. Edward Lewis, Richard Gere, asks Vivian Ward, Julia Roberts, why she became a prostitute and why she did when she could be so much more and do so much more with her life. And she says, if people put you down enough, you start to believe it. He tells her, I think you're a very bright, very special woman. To which she replies, the bad stuff is easier to believe. Have you ever noticed that? See, some of you will have noticed that, and your life has been ruined by it. You've discovered that the bad stuff you've done is easier to believe. But whatever you've been told in the past, whatever you've heard in the past, indeed, whatever you've done in the past, come to Jesus and you can have the past wiped clean, a fresh start, and it's wonderful. But again, for some, that is making your blood boil. This woman ruined people's lives. How can she be forgiven? You see, there's basically two groups of people. One group will be saying, yeah, I'm too bad to be forgiven. But there's another group who's saying, I don't need to be forgiven. I'm good enough for God. And if you're in that group, then you're most likely to be terribly annoyed that even this prostitute can be forgiven. Now, of course, that is how the Pharisee thought. Let's pick up the story again in line 39. When the Pharisee who'd invited Jesus saw this, he said to himself, if this man were a prophet, he would know who's touching him and what kind of woman she is, that she's a sinner. Jesus answered him, Simon, I've something to tell you. Tell me, teacher, he said. Two men owed money to a certain moneylender. One owed him 500 denarii and the other 50. Neither of them had the money to pay him back. So he cancelled the debts of both. Now, which of them will love him more? Until this point, the Pharisee has remained nameless. He's just been called one of the Pharisees. Now we learn his name. He's Simon. Because now it's getting very personal. This little story in lines 40 to 42 gets very personal. For me, one of the most difficult things about travelling abroad is handling foreign currency. Do you have the same problem that I had? You know, as you're standing at the checkout and the woman at the checkout sort of tells you how much you owe and you don't really understand what she's said to start off with, but you see the sort of numbers on the checkout screen and then you're looking through your change. Do you want to think, how much do I give her? And I always just give her a really big note and end up with more and more change coming my way because I can never work out. Even worse are those times when you're looking through the store and you're thinking, how much am I going to pay actually in English here? You know, you've got the price in dollars or euros or whatever, and you're standing there for ages thinking, what actually, how does that compute? And what is normally a fairly straightforward calculation, the longer I stand there, the more my mind goes blank. Does that happen to you? No, you're far more intelligent than that, aren't you? I can see. You know, none of you are connecting with this story at all. Well, look, for those of you who might be a bit like me, who do struggle to do their sums, I've had all week to work it out, so let me help you. In fact, somebody helped me to do this sum because I couldn't do it myself. Here in lines 41 to 42, you see, 50 denarii is about a month and a half's wages. So shall we say about £4,000? And 500 denarii, well, that's fairly easy to work out then. That's about £40,000. So that's the figures in line 41. Not small sums, about £4,000 or £40,000. Now that we've worked out the exchange rate, let me put line 41 into British currency and we can see how we would answer. Line 41, two men owed money to a certain moneylender. One owed him £40,000, the other £4,000. Neither of them had the money to pay him back, so he cancelled the debts of both. Now, which of them will love him more? It's not a difficult question, is it? And Simon the Pharisee got it right. Line 43, Simon replied, I suppose the one who had the bigger debt cancelled. You have judged correctly, Jesus said. Now, that's very interesting in line 43, isn't it? Do you see Simon's reluctance to answer? I suppose. I said, well, it's obvious. Why do you say, I suppose, Simon? Because it's getting very personal now, and Simon knew it. Jesus is not suddenly and out of the blue deciding to pursue a career as a financial consultant. He's not changed from prophet to banker. No, this story is leading somewhere, and Simon knew it. I suppose, Jesus. See, when Jesus tells a story here in lines 41 to 42 about two people, up to this point, apart from Jesus, only two people have been mentioned at the dinner party, Simon the Pharisee and the prostitute. And so Simon's got the point. Simon, two people owed a debt. Simon, you're one of them. Simon, your spiritual bank balance is not in great shape. Simon, you're a debtor. Simon, you're a sinner. It's getting very personal, isn't it? See, Simon was a very religious and respectable man, yet Jesus says, Simon, you're a sinner. Oh, your debt may not be as great as the prostitute's, but you're a spiritual debtor all the same, and you can't pay. And we can bet our bottom dollar that if Jesus said that to Simon, he says it to every one of us here this lunchtime. But it's really not very popular to talk like this, is it? It's not very popular these days to talk of sin. The Sunday Times magazine made that point about a year ago. It was on the 11th of April last year. Let me read part of an article. Said this, people don't avoid sin anymore, they avoid being found out. A spot of adultery is okay as long as nobody gets hurt. Eating yourself stupid is fine as long as your stomach doesn't get fat and your face doesn't turn permanent brick red. And some sins aren't even wrong, the article goes on to say. Anger, well, that's just good, just letting off steam. Pride, we all need self-esteem. Envy gives you the urge to get on in life. Sins don't really exist as a serious idea in modern life. At best, they are a delicious tease, says the article. Well, that's absolutely right. It's amazing to read it in the Sunday Times magazine, but it's spot on. Sin doesn't really exist as a serious thought in modern life, and especially among religious people like Simon the Pharisee, and among respectable people like you and me. You see, we don't see ourselves as sinners because we can do what the Sunday Times says. We can excuse our sin. It didn't hurt anybody. It's letting off steam. It's not breaking up a marriage. It's not prostitution. We don't see ourselves as sinners because we can always point to someone else who's worse than us. That's what's going on here in this story. And that is what goes on in so many people's lives. I've lost count of the times people have said to me, I'm not a bad person. I'm not like Fred West or Harold Shipman or Ian Huntley or, well, you fill in the gap. But that's not the issue. Simon the Pharisee is not as bad as the prostitute, but that's not the issue. I'm not as bad as the rogue trader or the cowboy builder or the child molester, but that's not the issue. There may be people worse than me, but I'm still in Jesus' debt. And I'm so far up to my neck in debt, I cannot pay. That's the point of lines 41 to 42. See, the Sunday Times magazine is right. Sin doesn't really exist as a serious thought in modern life. But don't be fooled. God is as bothered about sin today as he ever was. And that's why it does matter See, a sinner is not someone who's just let themselves down or hurt others or reject society's norms. A sinner is someone who's rejecting God's law and therefore rejecting God himself. Jesus Christ has given us everything. We owe him our lives. But I wonder, how many times do we even acknowledge that? Being polite is a fairly big thing in our household at the moment. I mean, I hope it always will be. But we've got twin daughters, Susanna and Bethan. They're coming up to five. And so, really, I guess for the last couple of years, ever since they've learned to speak, for the last couple of years, we've been trying to teach them to say thank you and please. You know, this is sort of basic manners. And so every time they're given something, we do our best to remind them to say thank you by saying, and what do you say? There are glimpses that we're getting somewhere. We almost choked on our food the other day when one of our girls finished a mouthful and said, totally of her own volition, very nice tea, Mummy. We're getting somewhere. But I want to assure you, we're not the perfect model parents, and we haven't got the perfect model kids either, far from it. I think about a few months to one occasion when we were at the dinner table at my parents' house, so the girls' grandparents. Bethan piped up, pass me the tomato sauce, Grandma. Quick as a flash, before Grandma could lay her hands on the tomato sauce, I stepped in and said, now what do you say, Bethan? Pass me the tomato sauce. To which Bethan replied, pass me the tomato sauce now. Well, he says hard work as a parent. Many of you will know that. That's Bethan. Not that Susanna has got the hang of it. As sore as she saw some options coming in for dessert, and she got very excited. I want jelly, I want jelly. Once again, I did my best. Susanna, what's the magic word? And with a rather puzzled look on her face, she said to me, abracadabra? Well, it's just basic manners, isn't it, to say please and thank you. But how many of us ever bother to say thank you to Jesus for all that he's given us? At that level alone, we're in his debt, but it goes much deeper. We're in Jesus' debt, not just because he gives us so much, but because we're in debt as criminals, because we flout his laws, we ignore his rightful rule over our lives, we hurt people, people who he made. We're in his debt. And you see, this story is telling us it's no good hiding behind respectability or religion. Indeed, it's very dangerous to hide behind a religious veneer. That's Simon the Pharisee. Yes, there are people who have done things and they think that they're too bad to be forgiven. But far more are going to be like Simon the Pharisee, who think they don't need forgiveness because they're good people. Jesus says, don't be fooled. Respectable people are up to their necks in debt too. And one day the debt is going to be called in, and that's why it matters. You see, look how the story ends. Look what Jesus says to the woman in line 50. Jesus said to the woman, your faith has saved you. Go in peace. Go in peace. I suppose that's the big question of this incident. Have you made your peace with God? That's the question this story raises. Are you ready to meet Jesus Christ? I think of a man I went to visit who was dying of cancer with only days to live. We chatted about Jesus and forgiveness. He was a man who always believed God existed. He lived a respectable life. But as we chatted, he could not see his need of forgiveness. And when he died, he was not at peace. By contrast, I think of a friend of mine called Ray. His last words to me before he went to heart bypass surgery said it all. He said this, I'm not afraid of meeting God. I know I'm forgiven. He didn't survive the operation, but Ray went to meet Jesus Christ in peace. Are you at peace with God? See, it is only Jesus who can say these words to us here in verse 50. Your faith has saved you. Go in peace. Because just a few years after this incident, Jesus died on a cross. Luke tells us about it later on in his gospel. And when Jesus died on a cross, we're told that he died to take the punishment for our sins, the punishment that our sin deserves. And as he died, he said these three words, and with this I finish. He said, it is finished. In the original, in Greek, it's actually only one word, tetelestai. It is finished. It means it is paid. The debt has been cancelled, paid on the nail. Jesus, as he died on the cross, was taking the debt that you and I deserve. You and I deserve God's anger to come upon us, but he said, I will take it. For you, I will pay the price. It's as if he took out a checkbook and he wrote out a check of enormous value so that we can pay the price. And he hands the check to us Of course, it was much more than writing out a check. It cost him his life. He wrote this check out in death and blood. The price is paid, tetelestai. And so forgiveness is free, but it's not cheap. It costs Jesus everything. And that's why Jesus could say these words to this prostitute, your sins are forgiven, because she'd begun to live for him. And so you see, as we look at Jesus' death on the cross, it tells us that we all need his forgiveness. Do you think he'd have gone to the cross, gone through such a horrific death, if we could make our peace any other way? Of course he wouldn't. So let me ask, do you know the forgiveness of Jesus? If you see yourself as a really bad person, if you think I'm too bad to be forgiven, this story says, look at the prostitute. No one's bad enough for forgiveness. Anybody can be forgiven because of what Jesus did. That's wonderful news. And if you see yourself as a really good person and you think, I don't need forgiveness, look at Simon the Pharisee. Because Jesus says, yes, you do, but you can be forgiven. Well, I'm going to leave you there and hand back to Jago, who will tell us how we might want to respond to these thoughts. Thanks very much.